Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College. Brought to you by Wilson, proud to be the official basketball of NCAA March Madness. Shop the official NCAA game ball on Wilson.com. Now, here's your host, Tim Doyle.
Welcome back to another episode of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Tim Doyle, and alongside today, Louisiana Tech head coach Eric Conkle. Coach, what a journey it has been from college. Then you were a freaking high school coach and then back to college again. How many times has Jim Larrañaga, the current coach at Miami, actually hired you?
That's a great question. I think technically three times. First out of, I was a graduate assistant for Buzz Peterson at Tennessee. And then I left after 3 years and he hired me back. And then when he went to Miami, he hired me down there. So very grateful to Coach Larrañaga.
Yeah. Talk about the journey though. You go to two different Wisconsin institutions in Eau Claire and Platteville. Both teams, massive success. You played for great coaches, Bo Ryan, Greg Gard, so a who's who of Midwest basketball. But the question really is, when did you know that standing on the sidelines and leading a group of young men was going to ultimately be your profession?
Well, I was very fortunate to be able to play for a lot of great coaches. My high school coach, Greg Jensen, was very impactful in my life. Was recruited by Greg Gard. I always say he's a much better evaluator now than he was back then in 95. But was really impacted by those guys. I think a lot of kids, they go to school and the end of college seems so far away. I was focused on playing and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it wasn't really until my junior year where decided to work some college basketball camps in the summer. I was looking for a summer job. I was a Division III player, was paying for school, trying to find a way to earn money. Construction, I didn't want to do again. So I worked some basketball camps and that was really the trigger point of, wow, I'd really like to do this and see if I can figure out a way to earn a living coaching college basketball.
Well, you had a journey from college to high school, back to college, like I mentioned at the start. Why the jump back to high school? Was that a family thing?
It was. I had an opportunity to be a GA and then was hired as a full-time assistant for Coach Larrañaga, George Mason. At a young age. And after 3 years, my wife had an educational opportunity that took her to the University of Minnesota and was really at a kind of a crossroads there personally of what it is I should do. Do we be apart for 3 years? Do I travel with her? And just felt like the right thing to do was to go to Minnesota. I reached out to Ken Novak at Hopkins High School, who's legendary coach in the state, and turned out to be a great thing for me. It learned an awful lot. Had a great experience, met a lot of wonderful people, and always felt that if coaching was meant to be for me to get back to the college level, I'd be able to find my way to do that.
Yeah, what a great leverage thing in a marriage, too. You could be like, I went to Minnesota for 3 years for you, honey. I mean, that is like, I feel like I would be using that every fight I get with my wife. What an unbelievable card you could ultimately pull. But what did you learn exactly when you went down to the high school level? Because there had to be times, Coach, where you were sitting on the bench watching a high school team, and trust me, there are some bad high school games out there. And I'm sure you had to be thinking to yourself, like, am I doing the right thing right now?
Well, I'll tell you this. We had seven Division I players. And on those 2 years, we won a state championship the first year and had a great team the second. Learned so much. Coach Novak is really one of the best. And so I always look at every opportunity as a learning opportunity, as an opportunity to grow. And met a lot of people. College coaches were coming in and out of our gym and just got to learn on how they recruited and the presentations that they made. My focus always was to try to get back at the college level, but I was also very much in the present and trying to do a great job there at Hopkins and just learn as much as I could.
That's interesting you bring up the presentations and kind of now you're on the other side of the table, right? You had star players and there were a lot of great names. Blake Harfarber went there, right? Played at Minnesota. Who else went to Hopkins when you were there?
we had a number of guys. Trent Lockett went to Arizona State. Ray Cowles went to Santa Clara. Mike Brohammer went to Notre Dame. We had a number of guys. Dan Vanderveer went to Purdue. So we had a number of guys play both Division One, Division Two, Division Three. So it was a great experience.
What did you learn presentation-wise that you thought first that was good, or something you stole from coaches presentation-wise when they were recruiting one of those guys?
Well, I think the first thing is that just the importance of being authentic. You know, it's so important to be yourself. And then there's also the technological aspect of what kind of presentation guys had, from PowerPoints to video to different types of things. And really, more than anything, the connection that one makes and seeing how a coach may come in and talk to a number of different people and just have a real connection with from the assistant coaches like myself at the time to Coach Novak, to the kid, to his family, to everybody else. And just kind of watching how guys interacted with everybody.
And what did you see that you were like, ooh, if I ever become a head coach, I'm not going to do that?
I really can't say it. I saw anything like that. I mean, these guys were great. I mean, you talk about high level Division I coaches and assistants coming in there. They're there for a reason. So I was impressed really by everybody.
You know what I found interesting when you were naming all those players that went to these high profile schools? I didn't hear George Mason. I didn't hear Miami while you were at Hopkins. So maybe you didn't do a great job of following those players to Coach Larrañaga. But he goes out there and hires you, like you said, again. So George Mason, the high school, and then back to Coach Larrañaga. Have you modeled your program after Coach Larrañaga?
There's no doubt his fingerprints are all over this program in a lot of ways. I'm certainly a collection of my parents and my coaches and the teachers and the other coaches I've gotten to work with. But I spent 11 years with Coach L. There's a lot of different things that we do here that are similar to what we did working for him. So, yeah, without a doubt, he's had a major impact on my life and my coaching philosophy.
What advice would you give a guy who was a junior right now at a Division III program? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm talking about you, who figured out that was the journey. What advice would you give maybe someone who's coming out of college or someone thinking about entering the coaching profession? What valuable lessons did you learn along the way?
I think that the most important thing, whether it's coaching or whatever career you choose, it's to really follow your passion. And that will lead to great success, because if you wake up every day excited about what you're doing, there's going to be adversity. There's going to be pitfalls. There's going to be decisions you're going to have to make. But if you really enjoy it, I think that will work out. My dad worked in construction for a number of years. And I clearly remember it was a important moment in my life. I was 12 years old and he came home sweaty, dirty, helped him take his shoes off. I was the remote control because we had three channels and he told me to turn it to channel 7. And then he looked at me and said, "Hey, when you decide to go to work one day, make sure you do something you really enjoy." And that's really what I've tried to do my whole life.
You know, you said something to me. I had your team earlier this year and you guys got whacked by, I believe it was LSU. And I asked you, I said, did you learn anything from that game? And you talked about adversity and really seeing your team's true character after a loss. And you know, myself as a broadcaster, I've had ups and downs. My son had open heart surgery August 31st. I've had ups and downs with him. I mean, that was a 50-50 surgery. When you push a kid into that operation room, it's about as vulnerable as anyone could feel. And, you know, I really took what you said personally, because it is true. Like, you find out the most about yourself when your back's up against the wall. What moment did you have like that when you were in coaching?
Well, certainly when you know, you have a tough loss and you've got some guys, but then you also have times that, you know, where recruiting goes a certain way and you lose a guy and you got to be able to adjust. And then there's other types of things, injuries to a great player. And, you know, I know very much. I remember when I was at the University of Miami and we won the league back in 13 and we lost our top six. And then we had Shane Larkin as a sophomore who went to the NBA draft, and we had to really retool that roster. And that's a face of adversity. You're like, how are we going to do this? And then you got to put your nose to the grindstone and keep working and keep just fighting every day. And it helps when you got people around you that you enjoy working with.
You know, you take over a program that, I mean, I'll say it doesn't have like a huge storied history, but it does have a pretty significant player that came through those doors one day. That being Karl Malone, who played his college basketball at Louisiana Tech. I know this answer because we've talked about this before. But if Karl Malone's walking on one side of the street, Eric Conkle's on the other side of the street, does he even know who you are?
He absolutely does. he lives here in town. We text regularly, and he is a great supporter of our program. He has, over the years, really built a lot of businesses here in Ruston. But he's a special guy. And you know, you go to our history, Tim. Paul Millsap played here. P.J. Brown played here.
Yep.
Randy White, that was drafted in the lottery, and there's a host of other guys. But it's a there is some good tradition here, and we're trying to build some more.
It's interesting, as a coach, you talked about those great alumni. When you took over this job, was that a focus of yours to connect with some of the old school players?
Absolutely, and it's continuing. We're trying to build a players program here always, where guys that have played here, whether it's 5 years ago, 50 years ago, that they feel welcome back. We have a wall in our hallway where alumni that come back sign it. And we've had some that played here in the 50s that have come back. We had a player come back with his family from Australia, was on a trip back here to the United States and came through Ruston to a game. So it's important to us that this is really about the players and their experience and their feelings about the university to come back.
You took over Louisiana Tech program that had success. You kept it going. What's been the key to that continuity despite the coaching staff change?
Well, it is a special place, and I think it can attract special people. And it's really coming down to having the right type of players and being able to have the right type of assistant coaches to be able to have a culture here that's based on showing up every day with a great attitude and being committed to getting better and doing things the right way. And, you know, it was able to recruit and retain guys that have been able to follow through with that and have some great success.
As an assistant coach, how'd you know when the time was right and you knew like the time was now for you to maybe move down those chairs and you felt you were a head coach? How many years into the process?
Well, I'm sure every assistant feels like they're ready right away. You know, I was, you know, always, the goal was always to be a head coach, and you just keep learning and keep trying to be ready. And then sometimes that opportunity is really just asked of you. It's for someone else to feel like you're ready. And I'm grateful that Louisiana Tech and Tommy McClellan at the time, that our athletic director and Dr. Geis felt like I was the guy back in 15. Very, very grateful to them.
What's been the biggest difference? Or were you surprised by anything? I guess that's more the question. Were you surprised by anything? Like you said, everybody wants to be the head of the class. Everybody wants to be the head coach. But when you got in that position, were there a couple of decisions that you had to make that were like, whoa, that was a little bit more difficult than I anticipated?
Well, I think it's what you said, Tim. There's a big difference between making suggestions and making final decisions. And those final decisions can be really magnified, especially when you're entering into something for the first time, from, hey, what time do we practice? What time do we do this? And also realizing that each program is different from the way they operate to how the different things are structured internally, but making all those different decisions and then training your staff, hiring the staff, it's different, but definitely I was happy to do it.
You know, when I went to St. John's, I started my career there playing in the Big East, and then I finished at Northwestern. Talk about two different programs, that's St. John's and Northwestern. But at St. John's, we used to practice in the morning. And I know that was kind of a philosophy of the late, great John Chaney at Temple that Mike Jarvis had adopted. And I never really asked him what his philosophy was, but I think it was because so there wouldn't be too many late nights for the guys on the squad. I know that prevented me from belling up some nights at bars like Gantry and on Jamaica Avenue there, because I was like, ah, man, I got to go to practice in the morning. I still hated those practice every single day because I was like, oh, this is horrible. We got to practice this early. Maybe one of the reasons for why I transferred. But you're right. Those are the decisions you have to make. Are we going to go early? Are we going to go late? Are we going to be certain lifting? Is there anything you did during the COVID pause with your team to to maybe kind of regenerate them, re-energize them, because this has been a hard journey for everyone. I don't care if you're living in the United States, you're living across the world. This has been such a unique journey. And these players look to you. And I know that's maybe hard for you to digest, but your father figure for a lot of these guys in their life. What did you do throughout this COVID pause, or when the season ended, or you couldn't be around your players, that maybe re-energized them?
Well, I think the hardest thing about all of that is, as a head coach, you try to have answers. And when you don't have answers for your players, that's difficult. And during COVID, I have notes from when our conference tournament got canceled to, I look back on this, we were initially scheduled to come back in April. Said, hey, we're gonna focus on this, but we'll probably be back in a month. Well, that month turned into several, and not having those answers was hard. But I think it's, you know, we tried to have team Zooms from time to time, but I tried hard just to spend one-on-one conversation with guys on the phone and just how you doing back in your own community, because one guy back in Florida is different than one guy back in Texas or Arkansas or Louisiana. So we just try to always have a personal touch with each guy and listen to them and see how they're doing.
Would you FaceTime or would you phone call?
Oh, I've done both. I know how to FaceTime, Tim. And these guys, that's how they act too. I mean, they're more naturally FaceTimers than they are phone call guys, for sure.
No, I'm a FaceTime only guy. So even with my friends and stuff, that way, you know, whether it was having a beer during COVID and getting away from my own individual family to trying to get some normalcy. And now the whole key with FaceTime, you know this, Coach, it's all about the angles. Now I'm a little bit heavier than you are. I'm a bigger guy. So you don't want to shoot from below, because now the double chin comes into play. You know, you still have that kind of that Ken look, like you and Barbie, like it's like you haven't aged at all in all these years that I've known you. But what has been the difference when you got to the Division I level? Now you've kind of had a unique journey, right? Because it's like mid-major, high school, high major, back to mid-major. And now you have guys that other teams want. Like, that's got to be so unusual now, because I mean, think about college basketball next year. What are the rosters going to look like? I tell everyone to stay in school if they're going to pay for your degree. And now everyone has different situations. But what's it like now? You got a team that's on the rise. You got a team that can clearly compete for a conference championship. That do you have to recruit the guys even during the season?
I think it comes down to what we were saying earlier. It's about being authentic, and it's about providing an atmosphere and a culture that is positive, and where guys can grow. And I think deep down inside, people feel that, man, I'm safe here. I'm appreciated. I'm getting better. Things are going well. And then that can be attractive to someone to want to keep pursuing that. And, you know, I'm all about what's best for the guys. This is their life. This is their future. This is about them growing into the man in the future self that they want to be. And we just enjoy being a part of that journey and trying to help every way we can.
Last question for you. We appreciate your time. Back-to-backs. A lot of the old school coaches, they don't like it. Who knows if it's going to become a new norm, especially because of cost-cutting issues and teams on travel and get those back-to-back games in. But what's been the biggest adjustment for you as a head coach?
Well, I think it's very different to only know that you have one opponent a week. It's similar to a football setting that way, where you've kind of game plan for both games throughout the week, and then any type of contingencies or different things. I know it's expanded our playbook. It's even expanded what we've wanted to do defensively a little bit, because we have a little bit more time not preparing for that next opponent. But there's also the physical nature of it, being able to adjust the tempo of the week, the duration of practice, the intensity of practice leading up to knowing that we've got two games scheduled for Friday, Saturday. I spent some time with some Ivy League coaches, because that's what they've been doing for years, and just learning and how they scheduled for their week. And that's been helpful, but it's been a challenge, but it's certainly better than the alternative.
Well, take us a peek under the hood. Now I'm curious. I know I said it was the last question, but what advice did they tell you as far as those back-to-backs? Because that's a great point. The Ivy League is so unique because they prioritize going to school. The games are, you know, the sports kind of second at those schools. Give us a peek under the hood about any inside info that they might have gave you.
Well, first, it's interesting. They do prepare for two teams. And one coach told me that they'll do the Wednesday's practice will be for Saturday's game. Thursday's practice will be for Friday's game. And then Tuesday, they all said, almost every one of them, to have a day of the week, whether it's Monday or Tuesday, is really a skill day, a refreshing day. Even consider, depending on the age of your team or the injury situation, if it's another off day. But we've used Tuesday as an individual skill day, two groups, 50 minutes, tons of shooting, high intensity, but a shorter period. And I think that's been good for our group.
Well, I'm sorry if I called you a Ken doll. That to me is actually a compliment, all right? Like, you, that's how good you look at your age. I look horrible and I have to dye my hair. But now with these Zooms, you only see me from the waist up. I'm totally barefoot and I'm in shorts right now. But we appreciate you joining the show. Thanks so much, Coach.
I appreciate the compliments, Tim. Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks as well for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Coach Eric Conkle, if you don't know about Louisiana Tech, follow them closely. I think they're going to be an absolute beast this year in Conference USA. Coach, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks.